Heichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 78 in the series entitled Street Corner Jews, Part 1. This class was recorded live at Heichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 30th of Cheshvan, 5760.
As an introduction to the 30th chapter of the Tanya, let me begin with the following Hasidic tale. They tell the story about one of the great Hasidic masters, the holy Reb Shmelka of Nikolajburg, that he once arrived in a city where he was greeted and welcomed by a very large group of disciples, Hasidim, followers, students, admirers, who came to welcome their saintly master, seek his counsel, his blessing, listen to words of inspiration, encouragement, and Torah wisdom. And they arranged for a major Kabbalah sponim, for a major reception, a major ceremony, where many hundreds of Jews were expected to come see this great master. And when he arrived to the reception hall, before he walked in, the holy Reb Shmelka requested that they give him for a few moments a private room. And he went into that private room. One of the Hasidim, I guess a curious man, was very anxious. He was very curious to know why the Rebbe needed a room. What is the holy Reb Shmelka of Nikolajburg doing right now in that room? So he came to the room and he put his ear near the door to listen to what is going on. And to his astonishment, he hears his master, his Rebbe, Reb Shmelka, saying the following words. I'll say them in Yiddish. Bruchim haboyim heileke Rebbe zu unser Stadt. Welcome, Holy Rebbe, to our city. Es ist für uns die größte Schuss und Verginnigung, so haben wir eine Grace und Sadik bei uns in Stadt. Achad bedor, arashche behag, rabbi schlokol bnei hagoyle, amanig Yisrael, atal mit chochem, agon, at Sadik, amud hayomin, patash achoyzik. Which basically means, welcome to the city, Holy Master of Shmelka. It is for us the greatest privilege and pleasure and delight to have such a tzaddik, such a saint, one in a generation, a leader of so many Jews, a pillar of Torah, a pillar of spirituality, a pillar of righteousness. Later, when the chassid had a chance, he asked Reb Shmelka to explain to him what this absurd behavior was all about. So Reb Shmelka told him, he says, simple. When I was in the room, I was anticipating what my Hasidim are going to say to me when I will come out to the reception. What compliments, what praise they will bestow upon me when I come out to the ceremony. So I decided, let me first, as an introduction, utter all of these praises to myself, by myself. And let me sense its foolishness, so that later when the Chassidim will say it to me, I will realize and it will resonate how foolish it is. And I thought that this story is somewhat of an interesting introduction to the content of this chapter, which basically presents to us a realistic look, a realistic view on those people we consider being inferior to ourselves. Is it really so foolish when we hear ourselves or others saying that we are greater than other human beings? Or is it maybe just a conventional habit that as part of society, when somebody compliments you, you have to say enough, enough, don't exaggerate, even though you believe every word he's saying? Is Reb Shmelke's message that it's foolish? Is it real? Is that right? Is that correct? In that sense, this chapter is a classic in Tanya. It has become essential to the Weltanschauung and to the pathway, to the path of life of Chassidus Chabad, founded and envisioned by the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya. It's also interesting to note that the entire chapter 30 was added at a later point when the Alter Rebbe was sending the Tanya to print. As I mentioned numerous times, or a few times, there was a Madura Kama, a first version of the Tanya that Alter Rebbe wrote up, and he allowed people to copy it, and it was copied, and many manuscripts of it were publicized, and that included already most of the Tanya, but it did not have chapter 30. When many, many errors made their way into the text of the Tanya, and the Alter Rebbe was compelled to send it to print, one final edition that would be printed, he revised his first version, and he added some ideas, just as he deleted others. He also added two complete chapters, the present chapter 30 and chapter 32. In the first version, you went straight from chapter 29 into what is today chapter 31. And then chapter 33. But in the Madura Basra, in the final version of Tanya before it went to print, Alter Rebbe added chapter 30 and chapter 32. And it's very characteristic because both of these chapters basically deal with how we are supposed to deal with people that we have problems with, ideologically, psychologically, emotionally, mentally. In chapter 30, it's about being humble in the presence of people that we think are inferior to ourselves. In chapter 32, he deals with loving human beings that we have a lot of problems with, and we will get there. And both of these chapters were added in the final version of the Tanya that went to print in the year Tov Kuf Nun Zayin 1796. So let us begin inside. Zog der Alter Rebbe. In addition to what has been discussed above, a person must also set his heart to one more truth. What is he referring to? Chapter 29 was dedicated to a condition he defined as Timtum Halev. Timtum Halev means a verstopte heart, a stopped heart, an unimpressed heart, a dull heart, a heart that is blocked, that is plugged, that is unresponsive. It's unimpressed. It's not vital. You may reflect, you may think, you may understand, you may meditate, but your emotions are just not responding. You remain numb, cold, and frozen. You may think or reflect or envision or appreciate wondrous, splendid truths ideas, realities, experiences. But for some reason, you just have timtum halev. Your heart is dull. Your heart just does not respond. Your heart is somewhat dead. It's dead. Timtum halev. And Alter Rebbe explained, this is a consequence of the fact that your or my animal, egotistical soul has inflated its ego so much that it does not allow me to feel anything of the tenderness or of the flow or of the light of the godly soul, of the divine consciousness of the Nefesh HaLikis. The animal soul has inflated its ego so much that it created a complete husk and a shell, and it blocks any passageway from my inner spiritual soul into my revealed heart. And thus, the Alter Rebbe said, the method to deal with this, the solution is, one must put his ego into its place so that the soul can emerge. So chapter 29 was dedicated to presenting various meditations that a human being can engage in order to put his ego where it belongs, to slap the ego, to deflate the arrogance of the animal soul, to deflate it. And yes, it was a very sharp chapter. It's actually the sharpest chapter in Tanya, where Alter Rebbe discusses in a very unique fashion the way that you ought to scream and shout and thunder on your ego. Simply scream at it. In chapter 30, he now continues with this theme, and he presents another very important and vital meditation that can help us deflate our egos. It can help us put life in perspective, put ourselves in perspective, so that we should be able to live in not such a pathetic way. We shouldn't become pathetic about who we are, and which doesn't allow us to experience our soul. And for this, he gives us a new meditation. So let's see. Another meditation, another truth to which you must set your heart to, as Lakayim Maimer Azal, to fulfill the instruction of our sages. Vehevei Shfal Ruach Bifnei Kol HaAdam. You should be humble before every human being. And here he is quoting, of course, a Mishnah and the ethics of our fathers in Pirkei Avos, chapter 4, Perik Dalad Mishnah Yud Mishnah 10, where Reb Meir tells us, Hevim Emayid Be'esek Vasek B'Torah, diminish your deep engagement in business, in material affairs, and immerse yourself in the study of Torah. And Reb Meir adds, Vehevi Shval Ruach Bifnei Kal HaAdam, and you should be humble before every human being. So the basis of this chapter is to show us and teach us and guide us how we could fulfill this instruction of Reb Meir, to be humble in the presence of every single human being, Bifnei Kol HaAdam. How do we do this? This is the meditation the Alter Rebbe is encouraging us to inculcate into our minds and our hearts, particularly when our ego is inflated and we need to put it in its place in order that our divine soul, our noble soul, our transcendental consciousness should be able to emerge in its full splendor. And Alter Rebbe begins to explain, the first explanation is on the word vehevei, and you shall be. You shall be vehevei shmaruach b'fnei kol adam. Zog the Alter Rebbe, vehevei, you shall be be'emes la'amitai, in the utmost truth, in all sincerity, in the utmost true sense of the word, you should be. When the Mishnah says vehevei shvaruach b'fnei kol adam, you should be humble, it means for real. The Alter Rebbe says it means not only for real, it means be'emes la'amitai, as real as you can get. You should really be humble. What is the Alter Rebbe saying here? Right in these words, even before we continue, we already have a unique contribution of the Alter Rebbe here in Tanya. Many people, including many thinkers, including some Jewish thinkers, particularly contemporary ones, and I remember hearing a lecture of a particular Rosh Yeshiva, a dean of a very large yeshiva in America, who explained, and he found all these types of sources for his explanation. that of course the Mishnah doesn't mean it literally. That you and I should really, really be and feel humble before every person. Apparently he said, that's ridiculous, that's absurd. I know that I am greater than my fellow man. I am more virtuous than him. I am better than him. I am superior to him. What does the Mishnah mean? You should behave as though you harbor such feelings of humility. In other words, you should respect other people and listen to other people and be tentative to other people and behave in a sensitive fashion to other people as though you would have been harboring such emotions of humility in their presence. In other words, the Torah is telling you that you should behave as though you have such a feeling. Just as somebody who truly feels humble and respects every human being, listens to every human being, doesn't walk around with an inflated ego and looks down at people, listens to people, that's how you should behave. The results of your behavior should reflect such a type of feeling, even though you don't have such a type of feeling. So the Alter Rebbe comes and says, no, vehevei be'emez lamitoi. When the Torah says you should be a certain way, you should experience itself a certain way, it means truthfully. You should really experience yourself that way. And here, even before we go further, we already have a profound lesson of how the Alter Rebbe wants us to relate to a statement in Torah, including a statement of our sages, which is part of Torah. Torah says, you should be a certain way. It means for real. In other words, when Torah advocates a certain type of feeling in a person, what does it mean? Does it mean, like some people feel, that despite the fact that the reality may not be so, the Torah demands that I should impose upon myself such a feeling? So the Alter Rebbe says, no, vehevei be'emes la'amitai. What the Torah is saying is that you should really experience it. You should really experience yourself this way. You know why the Torah is telling you should really experience yourself that way? You know why? Because that's the truth. Because you are humble in the presence of every person. It's the real thing. There's something very real about it. In other words, it's a healthy way to live. This feeling is consistent with reality. It's consistent with truth. When I feel humble in the presence of every person, I am feeling something real. I am feeling something genuine. It's not fake. It's not imposed. I am in touch with reality. In fact, when I don't feel humble before every human being, my vision is distorted. And the contrast is very important to emphasize. I'll give you an example. There's a story about one of the last generation, about one of the Chachmei HaMusar, one of the rabbis who was very into Musar, into ethics and self-refinement. His name was Reb Naftali Amsterdam. And he was known for his humility. And he was a Rav in Finland. So members of his community in Finland used to tell the story that throughout all the years that Reb Naftali Amsterdam served as a rabbi, as a spiritual leader in the community, he never walked into the shul, to the synagogue, without holding a sefer, without holding a book. Whatever it may have been, whether it was a Mishnayis, a Gemara, a Chumash, a Shulchan Aruch, or any other book of Torah. Why? Because when he'd walk into shul, everybody would jump up from their seats. But as a result of him holding the Sefer, he can always attribute the fact that the community and the congregation stood up to the fact that he was holding a book and not to the fact that he, Reb Naftali, walked into the shul. So he can tell himself throughout his life, throughout his career, they're not standing up because of me. They're standing up because of the Sefer that I am carrying. Therefore, they're standing up. So personally, I think what the story meant and the reason he did it was, if I'm not mistaken, is because he was perhaps trying to teach them that the honor that we give to a rabbi, to a spiritual leader, is not because the human being is superior to us. It's because what he represents. It's because the Torah that's in his heart. It's because the Torah that's in his soul. The moment he doesn't represent the truths of Torah anymore, he doesn't have any power. A rabbi doesn't have authority to control people's lives. The moment he's not humble, the moment he's not committed, the moment he's not surrendered to the authority of the Shulchan Aruch, to the authority of Hashem, to the authority of Torah, he loses his power. But as other people tell the story, they actually say it very literally. That he really used to tell himself that they're not standing up because of him, they're standing up because of the Sefer. Now, I don't know if he really thought so. I know if it would happen to me, in my own heart, I would know that they're not standing up because of the Sefer. When somebody else walks in with a Sefer, they don't stand up. And there are Svarim in the Shul and they're not standing. When I walk in with the Sefer, they're standing up because of me. Which means that if your humility or my humility is stemming from such a fact, from such a perception, really the whole humility is false because it's based on a deceiving thought. It's based on a forced feeling that is not genuine. So my whole life is not healthy. I'm basically deceiving myself that I'm feeling things that are not real. It never happened. They are honoring me because they want to honor me. I'm telling myself they're not honoring me, which is not real. And that's how I become humble. So the whole humility is based on futility. It's based on groundlessness. If I just made up a word, it's based on non-truth. What type of humility is that? The moment I become real, my humility is out of the window. I once heard from one of the students of the Navardika Yeshiva. They were the legendary students of the Navardika Yeshiva in Lithuania. That who, in order to instill humility and humbleness in their psyches, they would go in, let's say, to a fruit store and ask the person behind the counter to sell them a pair of pants or a suit. So the person would begin laughing from them. He would scoff at them. Don't you see this is a fruit store? We sell here apples, oranges. We sell here plums, peaches and grapes. We don't sell her pants. We don't sell her suits. But as a result of that, and especially if it was done in public, they felt humble and their ego was deflated. Or there were those students of Navardik or of Kelim who would go during the hot summer days. They would go dressed in the street with a very thick coat. Again, people would look and scoff and laugh at them. And they uprooted from their heart the arrogance that so many people harbor throughout their life. And these are not exaggerated stories. These are stories that are printed and transcribed by the students themselves who are very proud of it. But this is not the approach the Alter Rebbe takes here in Tanya, with all due respect to these human beings and their sincere efforts. Because there is something missing here. These students had to go into the fruit store and be laughed at in order to feel humble. Why? Because without that, they would not feel humble in the presence of other people. When you laugh at me in the store, now I feel humble. So how deep is the humility? How healthy is the humility? There is a Gevaldike story. It's a very deep story about one of the great Chassidim of the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, Rebbe Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and the third Lubavitch Rebbe, the grandson of the Alter Rebbe. His name was the Rashbatz, an acronym for the Shmuel B'tzala. So Chassidim say that somebody once told the Rashbatz that in the city of Minsk, there exists a concealed cat, a concealed group of anavim, which means it's a unique, concealed, inconspicuous society of humble people. When the Rashbatz heard it, he responded and he said, very interesting, I just have three questions. First of all, how can you have a society, a group of humble people? It's an oxymoron. If they are humble, how did they join up to form a society? Second, my second question is, if they're concealed, how did we find out about them? And my third question is, and this was the deepest question, what do they have to hide? What do they have to hide? Here is ultimately the real question. And this is what the Alter Rebbe wants to say, I think, with Vehevei Be'emes Lamitei. Does religion, does Judaism, does Torah make you a more authentic human being or a less authentic human being? Does Torah make you more normal or less normal? More real or less real? Does Torah allow you to become more connected with yourself or less connected from yourself? More aligned with your true identity or detached from your true identity? There is the cynical anecdote about the secular person who asks an old religious man, he says, "Tell me, if you would have to choose between truth and God, which one would you choose?" And the old religious man turns to this young secular cynic and says, "Of course, God." And of course, he missed the whole point. If he has to choose between truth and God and he's going to choose God, he missed the whole point. Chassidus came to demonstrate that Yiddishkeit is the way of life that allows us to express our deepest identity, that allows us to maximize our core self. And the same is true when it comes to the instruction and injunction of the Torah. Be humble before every person. You know why you should be humble before every person? Because that's the truth. That's the real way to live. That's the most authentic way to live. And by the way, this approach one sees right away in the title page of Tanya. What's the opening title page of Tanya? We spoke many times about it. To explain the pasuk Kikarev Elacha Adavr Miyad Beficho Vavchal Asaisa, that the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu says, the Torah is not across the sea, the Torah is not in heaven, it's intimately close and accessible to you. Now apparently, one who is reading that pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim can easily say, it's poetry. Moshe Rabbeinu is expressing a sentiment. Moshe Rabbeinu is expressing a feeling. The Torah is not across the sea. The Torah is not heaven. The Torah is very close. He may be talking about himself. But the Alter Rebbe says no. If it's a pasuk in Torah, it's true and it's eternally true. And therefore I'm writing a Tanya Levayer Hetiv Eichu Karav Miyot, to explain well how it is Karav Miyot. How can you say that Yiddishkeit is truly close to a person? And for this, he explains the concept of the two souls and so on and so forth. And in our case, the big question is, how can you say that I should really feel humble in the presence of other people? I know concerning certain people that I am better than them. In my daily behavior, I'm better than them. I'm superior to them. Fine. Let's say it's my ego. Let's say we remove the percentage of self-evaluation that is coming because of ego. Are you going to tell me there's no human being who is inferior to me, who is lower than me, who is less valuable than me? How can you say that? How can you say I should harbor such a feeling sincerely? Another problem. What about self-esteem? Self-esteem is an important virtue. Self-respect. Confidence in your identity. Liking yourself. Appreciating yourself. How are we supposed to educate our children? Does the Mishnah want we should educate our children and teach our children that you should feel humble before every member of the school? Before the bully and before the troublemaker? Is that how we want to educate our children? What type of identity, what type of psyche will our children grow up with? This is a major problem. And this, the Alter Rebbe is going to explain in our chapter and explain it at length. So, in the meantime, we discussed the first word, Vehevei Be'emes Lamitei. Now the Alter Rebbe continues the next words. Ve'veish va'ruach b'fnei kala adam. You should be humble before every person. So the Alter Rebbe says, b'fnei kala adam mamish. Where the Meir says in Pirkei Avos, you should be humble before every person. He again means it literally. He doesn't mean it in an exaggerated fashion or a poetic fashion or a euphemism. He means it really, b'fnei kala adam mamish, in the presence of literally every human being, afilu b'fnei kal shebekalim, which means even in the presence of the most light, of even in the presence of kal shebekalim, of the most light-headed among the light-headed. Even if you encounter somebody who's not only a light-headed human being, but he's kal shebekalim among the light-headed themselves, he's even more light-headed and more apathetic and more indifferent. He is the pinnacle, the extreme of light-headedness. In his presence, he is an adam. He is a human being. You ought to feel humble in his presence. There's an interesting interpretation. Kal shebekalim, literally it means kal shebekalim, the light-headed one among the light-headed ones themselves. But there's an interpretation, kal shebekalim, a very interesting one. Kal shebekalim means that even the kalim identify him as a kal. Even the kalim call him a kal. Even people that are light-headed and are pathetic, they say, oh, this guy you got to watch out from. This guy is a real kal. So even this kal shebekalim, you ought to feel humble. And the million-dollar question is, how? So here the Alter Rebbe begins the explanation. And here he introduces something that is revolutionary. And what I mean by that is that today, 200 years after the Tanya was published, 200 years after Chassidus saturated the Jewish world, and as a result of that, to a significant degree, the general civilization, these concepts that he introduces here are readily and easily comprehensible and understood, although much more difficult to implement. But anybody who is familiar with the culture and the literature of that time knows that when the Alter Rebbe wrote this, and when people read this 200 years ago, it indeed stirred up many a heart, creating an inner commotion, an inner revolution, which is true about many chapters of the Tanya. Zok d'Alter Rebbe v'hainu, this can be accomplished, al pi maimer azal, following another instruction of our sages, also in Pirkei Avos, al tod in es chavercha achetagi alim koimai, judge not your fellow human being until you reach his space. This is the Mishnah. In Masechta Avos and Pirkei Avos, chapter 2, Perek Beis Mishnah Dalet, Hillel says, don't separate from the rest of the community. Don't believe in yourself till the day of your death. V'al todin es chavercho ad shetagi alim koime. Perek Beis and Pirkei Avos, Mishnah Dalet. Don't judge your friend. Don't judge your fellow man. Al todin es chaverach. Don't judge your fellow man until you have stood, until you have placed yourself in his place. So the Alter Rebbe says, this is the second Mishnah that will allow us to incorporate the next Mishnah in Perek Dalid of Ehevei Shvar Ruach B'fnei Kalad. And Alter Rebbe will explain, what does it mean that you shouldn't judge your fellow human being until you have reached his space? What do we mean by space, by mekaymai? So the Alter Rebbe will give us two interpretations for his space. One is physical. Literally, the space, the physical environment in which this person finds himself in. And the second interpretation, maybe the most important interpretation, is the psychological space of this human being, the type of yetzahara, the type of negative inclination, the type of impulses and cravings that this human being experiences. But first he begins with the literal interpretation, the physical and concrete interpretation of don't judge your fellow until you reach his location, his space, his place, mekayma. Zog d'al t'rebbe ki mekayma goyrim loy lachtay. Why shouldn't you judge him until you reach his place? because it's his space, his physical environment, that causes him to sin. Since his livelihood requires him to go about the marketplace all day, and as a result of that, he often becomes one of those people who sits at street corners. And thus his eyes see all sorts of temptation. And as our sages say elsewhere, what the eyes see, the heart desires, which means the process of moral degeneration is, first you see something. You see it, you observe it, you gaze at it. As a result of you coming in contact with certain experiences and certain realities, your eyes are exposed to certain sights. It arouses within your heart instincts, temptations, and cravings. And Alter Rebbe continues, in addition to the space in a physical sense, that you have to realize where this person's space is. He finds himself in the marketplace, exposed to all types of sights which can arouse very heavy and negative impulses. In addition to that, let us analyze this person's psychological space. Additionally, it may be that this person's negative inclination is burning like a baker's fiery oven, which is heated with a much greater frequency and intensity than a domestic oven. As the prophet writes in Hosea, "Hu boyer ki yesh lahav v'goymer," he burns like a flaming fire, etc. And here he's referring to Hosea chapter 7, where the prophet describes the corruption of the Jewish people who lived in the northern part of Israel under Malchus Yisrael, Malchus Ephraim, the second kingdom that descended from the children of Yosef from Ephraim. And in Pasuk Dalet, chapter 7, Hosea says, "Kulam menafim kemaitanur bo'eira meyoifa." They are all engaged in adultery with the passion of a burning fire, of a burning oven of a baker. And in Pasuk 7, in Pasuk Vavi says, "Kol halayla yoshan eifeim." All night the baker sleeps. But boiker in the morning, who boyer kiyesh lahava, he burns like a flaming fire. And he continues in Pasuk Zayin, kulam yechamu ketanur, they are as hot as an oven. V'achlu as sheftayim, they consume their judges. And the Metzudas explains there in Hosea, he says that when Hosea compares them, letanur boyer meyoifu, to a baker's fiery oven, what it means is that I quote the Metzudas, "Chimum has nuz boyer b'em k'may tanur aboyer me'esek ha'ifa." The passion, the heatness of adulterous feelings burns in them like the oven that's burning from the fire that the baker created in it. What does this mean? There are many types of ovens. You have a microwave oven, you have a toaster oven, you have a big oven of a balabasta, of a regular person, of a regular kitchen, which can become very, very hot, and it's not advisable to, heaven forbid, put your finger into the oven. And in those ovens itself, there are many gradations of how hot it becomes, whether it's 100 degrees, 150 degrees, 200 degrees, 300 degrees, 400 to 500 degrees. But then there is a tanur b'yeir ha'meyoifa. There is the oven of a baker, the fiery oven of a baker. A baker also has an oven, and sometimes it's not burning, sometimes it's relaxing. But the baker's oven, if you ever went into a matzah bakery, and you even came close to that oven, you sense the tremendous titanic heat. You're dealing with a whole other type of heat. You're dealing sometimes with ovens that can go 1,000 degrees, sometimes 2,000 degrees, and sometimes even more. And the same is true when it comes to a Yetzer Hara. This is what Alter Rebbe is telling us. When it comes to the inclination that each of us has in his heart to sometimes behave in an immoral and unethical way. There are some people that have a Yetzer Hara that is as passionate as a microwave or as a toaster oven. Some people have a Yetzer Hara that can become as hot as a bigger oven, a larger oven, and a more... An oven that becomes even hotter. But then there are people that have a Yetzirah that's kitanur be'edem yoifas, sebrent. This person's cravings and inclinations and temptations, whether it's in issues of relationships or other issues, is so intense, it is so powerful, it is so tremendous that the human being who doesn't have that type of Yetzirah doesn't even know what type of craving this person is experiencing. He doesn't even have an inkling. He doesn't even have the slightest appreciation of the inner demons and the profundity of the struggle that his fellow human being is going through. So the Pasuk in Hosea is not only discussing how guilty the Jewish people are, but according to this Tanya, it's also explaining the struggle that caused them to sin. There's a major fire burning in their hearts. And the Alter Rebbe now contrasts this to the other person, Masha'en Kein Mi. Shehoi Lech B'Shuk Ma'at. It is different, however, with the human being who goes about very little in the marketplace. While most of the day he is at home, rather than sitting in the street on the street corners, he sits at home or in the Beis Medrash or in the yeshiva or in the kollel or wherever it is or in the office, and he therefore encounters much less temptation. So his physical space is a different space. The people he hangs around with are different types of people. The streets he walks on are different types of streets. The things he sees are different types of things. One person is sitting on a street corner. He's exposed to immodest sights. Another person is sitting in front of a Gemara all day. Or even in front of a computer all day. If the computer is not exposed to immoral things of the computer. Even if he does go about the marketplace all day, so that his physical place is similar to the space of the Kal Shebekalim of the light-headed Jew, nonetheless, Yachilis, it may be that his spiritual makim is different. That he is not so passionate by nature, and therefore he is not so greatly tempted by the sight of what his fellow human being is tempted by. And we all know this from personal experiences. Some people respond to certain sights in different ways than others. Some people are much less passionate, they're much more introverted, they're much more reserved, they're much more cold, they're much more in their own world, they don't get turned on so fast. It doesn't mean they're angels. It just means that it takes something else to get them out of their box, to shake up their moral equilibrium. Others, you can trigger it like that. They yetzer hara brent. It's a matzah bakery and not for matzah for chametz.